We went and talked to some other property management companies, and some have multiple properties in that market in Waco. We knew all the elements were there. All these other properties, we knew the occupancy was really high, and some of them 100%, some of them were waiting lists. And so it did not make sense that this one had such a low occupancy.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome everybody to Multifamily Deal Lab, where we dissect deals. I'm with Mike DeRozier today. And Mike, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, David. I'm happy to be on. I'm Mike DeRozier. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. This Golden Gate Bridge backyard is close by to me. It's definitely my area, but I've lived here all of my life. I've been born and raised. I've been in the advertising marketing business for quite some time, but real estate has always been something I've been involved with, rentals, mostly on the single family side. But I mean, through Ari Mentor, really just brought me his major aha moments in the multifamily space and syndication world.
First of all, I have to apologize. I've been calling you Mike DeRozier for like forever. I didn't know it was DeRozier.
It's funny, in DeRozier here in California, you look in the phone book, when there was such thing as a phone book, you know, there'd be like maybe two. You look at it in Boston and there's like 100, right? It's a common name out there, but they do spell it differently in many cases.
Yeah. So you've been with us now for a couple of years, 3-4 years?
I started in 2018.
2018. How many deals have you done since then?
I'm in a general partner on right around 2,000 units, 13 different properties.
So from single family, you made the conversion to multifamily, and it's working.
It's working. That's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So today we're going to talk about your 56 unit deal. Tell us about your 50, because a lot of people think they have to go right into larger properties and they don't. I tell people all the time, start where you're comfortable, start maybe at a 3 to a 10 unit, then jump up to a mid-sized property, anywhere from 30 to 70 units, and then jump up to 100 plus. And then once you hit 100 plus, you won't look back, but you got to get there first. The reason I want to go up to the 56 is because I want to talk about what it takes to take down one of these mid-sized deals. How'd you come up with this deal? Where is it, first of all?
So this deal, the 56, is located in Waco, Texas. I was brought into it with one of my partners who had been searching the Waco market quite a bit. So he actually found the deal and then brought me in right away.
I want to ask you a question about Waco. Okay. So did he create a relationship with a broker that brought him to Waco? Or did he specifically, were you guys talking about, hey, I like this about Waco. Let's see if we can get a deal there.
Yeah. So he specifically found he liked Waco. He was researching that market in different areas, but really liked it. And the more he dove in, the more he liked it. And he was flying. He's also from California. He flew out there many times. He worked for Southwest. It was his job to fly out for free. And he kept going back and forth. And he's a Snoop Dogg. He goes out, he goes into as many apartment buildings as he can and pretends he wants to rent an apartment and gets tours and all that kind of thing. And he just found a very high occupancy. He found a lot of construction going on for commercial everything, cranes and going on all over the place. Baylor University is the main drive there, and they had huge expansion plans, both in, they built this giant welcoming center that looks like a football stadium, you could imagine, it's just giant, and they're adding all these additional personnel, and so it just really had all the indicators pointing that direction.
They get that couple down there, those house flippers.
Yeah, yeah. Chip and Joanna Gaines. Yeah, my wife goes crazy over that. The second I told her I was buying there, she said, I have to go. I want to go to that one.
I hear they've got a great store down there.
It does. Yeah. We went down there because I did take her down there to the property. And of course, she wanted to go there to Magnolia Square, right? They have this little bakery that they talk about, right? Which is a really small bakery, but there are probably like 50 people in line outside just to get into this bakery, buy something. Everybody's out front doing the selfies, the holding the cupcakes or holding their bag that says the name of the bakery. It's pretty cool. They do a great job.
That is a great tutorial on marketing.
Exactly.
Do you know they took the same Harvard class that I did?
Really?
The OPM class. Yeah, it was a 3-year program over there. And they were probably like 4 or 5 years behind me. But I happened to see on their, I don't know, their social media that they were there. And I was like, oh, interesting. That's excellent. All right. So 56 units, Waco, Texas. Partner brings a deal. What about the deal that stood out right away?
So it actually was the third deal that we were involved with out there. And the first two just did not work out for whatever reasons, mostly price. But this one actually was brought to us. So it's interesting. The broker that was on the first two deals, we were interviewing property management companies out there because we thought it was happening with these deals. And one of the property management companies that we interviewed, when we followed up with us, we said, no, the deal didn't happen. The property management company, the one of the ones that we had interviewed, let us know that there was another property in town that was having kind of some issues, occupancy and things with from a lack of communication with the owners. Anyway, we got in touch with them, and this turned out to be a property that was owned by three owners from California that were in their 80s, and they bought it in the 80s, and they're in their 80s. And they just kind of stopped communicating with the property management company. So what I'm saying is this property came to us from a property management company that we had interviewed for another property, and the property management company told us that, hey, you might want to look at this property because it's having a little troubles with the owners, stopped communicating with the property management company. And it was basically three owners in California. They're in their 80s and they've owned it since the 80s. The property management company was trying to get things repaired or fixed on the property, and they take them 2 weeks to get back to them. And so they basically stopped renting the unit. So their occupancy dropped. So they were down like into the mid 70s in the occupancy.
So if they stopped renting the units, they probably start to stop doing repairs as well?
They couldn't. Yeah, that was the thing. They couldn't rent them because they couldn't repair things, refrigerators or whatever was happening, plumbing. They couldn't get approval to get any of that fixed. And the owners would take 2 weeks to get back to them. They just basically stopped renting the units.
So this sets up an interesting dynamic. And that is, now you've got a property that's in decline. It's a repositioning because it's less than 85% occupancy. The owners are absentee, but yet at the same time, when they put a price out there, it's usually much higher than the property's actually worth. Was that the case in this one?
Well, it actually wasn't even for sale. That was the thing. It was completely off market. And these owners, I mean, right, they owned it since the 80s, right? They probably paid whatever, $20,000 a door, if that, for it back in the day. Now it's worth $90,000 a door. They're probably getting tens of thousands of dollars every single month in their paychecks, and they have been for years, and they just kind of stop paying attention, right? It's like, it's not broke, don't fix it. And I assume that's what we think kind of what happened, because they just stopped communicating with the property management company. So it kind of did open up a perfect storm. But then when we went in and we started negotiating with them and said writing offers for it, then they decided to sell.
By the way, this situation happens because people are older, number one. And number two, they bought it in the 80s. They probably have paid off the loan. They're getting cash flow from the property, even though it's at 70-something percent. They're not paying any other expenses on it. So therefore, you know, their cash flow is good and everything seems good until it gets to a point where there's no return. So talk about your first offer. And did they accept your first offer, or how did the negotiations go? And how did you, at 70-plus percent occupancy, that's less than 85%, which is equilibrium, how did you create that offer? How did you determine what you could offer for that property and make a profit?
Yeah, well, that was interesting. We had to do some creative underwriting to do that, obviously, and really look at what it was going to be to get that occupancy up. So a couple things happened. One, we looked at it, what we felt that would be at that 85% occupancy. We felt for sure we could get that done. We went and talked to some other property management companies, several of them, and some that have multiple properties in that market in Waco. And they said, no problem, we can rent this up in a second, and talked about, because we knew like all the elements were there, like all these other properties, we knew the occupancy was really high, and some of them 100%, some of them were waiting lists. And so it did not make sense that this one had such a low occupancy, but things in the units weren't fixed and they couldn't rent them, right? You can't rent it if the toilet's not working or the refrigerator doesn't have a refrigerator or a stove. So we had to underwrite it with that. But we also, obviously, in order to get the loan, we had to get the occupancy up. So we actually went in and tried to talk about a master lease to take it over, but they didn't want to do that. And so we just said, okay, here's the offer. We'll give you some money down on that. We want to extend this out, give us some time to lease these other units and get it up over the 85% before we close and before we get on a loan. So our risk at that time, but we felt extremely confident with it. And that's exactly what we did.
So you took the risk of putting money into these units so they could be rentable and then getting it up above 85 so you wouldn't have to take a bridge loan. Why didn't you consider the bridge loan financing, which would be the normal course for a deal like this?
We did actually do a bridge loan, but we did a fixed bridge loan with a local credit union. And that's what they wanted the occupancy up in order to close on the deal.
How much did you have to put in?
It wasn't really a lot. Doug Harmon is my partner on this. He's also a contractor. Single family, he's built a lot of single family homes. And so he really has the know-how to do all of that. And he didn't do it himself, but he arranged everything to do it fairly inexpensive. I don't even know, to be honest, not much. It was $10,000, something like that, $15,000.
Oh, yeah. Because at 56 units, how many did you have to rent out to get up to 80?
Yeah, there's only a few units we needed to rent. And it wasn't like major renovations. It was just simple fixes that we needed to do.
All right. So another question is, then why didn't you just go with agency financing, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, if you're going to go that route and get it 85 plus? Let me just explain why I'm asking that question, because your bridge financing is going to come in 2 or 3 years, right?
Actually, we got a great loan with it. The loan is a fixed bridge loan. It's 4.5 for interest only for 2 years. And then in 2 years, it goes to a P&I, but the rate actually goes down, guaranteed to 4.25%. So we haven't hit that yet, but we will be soon. So the interest rate will be 4.25%, but the principal will kick in. They calculated into our underwriting and we're able to manage that no problem. And then we have another 3 years on that.
So you're in for 5 years?
Yeah.
Still though, it would have been safer to do like a 10-year fixed Fannie or Freddie. That is a pretty decent loan.
Yeah, I guess it gave us the CapEx to be able to infuse. And so we're able to raise less money because we could use the bridge loan for $500,000 of the CapEx that we had budgeted.
Good point. So did they take that first offer or did they negotiate?
They negotiated a little bit, but not a whole lot. I think that they knew they needed to sell. They saw the occupancy going down. The property management company was telling them they have to sell. They were frustrated with the whole thing as well, too. So it didn't take a lot.
How much money did you have to raise to close?
It was about $1.5 million.
And where'd you get it?
Just through investors. I was able to kind of my investor pool. I raised probably most of that money. And then my partners did. We all put in a little bit of money ourselves as well. So the raise went pretty easy.
So explain to everybody how you created your investor pool.
I start my investors warming them up before I get into a deal, always, right? So I'm always like trying to communicate, pushing out little pieces of education or just what the business model that I'm in, what I've been taught through RE Mentor. I've always been pushing that out. I push it on social media, I push it out on newsletters. I'm always trying to gather my database that show interest, local meetup, and so on. And so when a deal comes up, then they're not surprised that I'm doing this. And I've already usually talked with them one way or another. And so just like me, we're looking for a great deal. And so are they. So it tends to attract them to be interested.
So you started just getting the word out that this is what you're doing and people started to have conversations with you.
Yeah, I mean, the first deal that I got in was in Texas in College Station, and I was invited in through another group. But I had already been with RE Mentor for about a year and I was struggling to get into my own first deal. And I felt like I had the education. I felt like I had the know-how, but I was struggling with the time that it took and trying to do working kind of solo, myself, my wife, and trying to do all the tasks, right? I mean, the broker calls, right? Sounds easy and it is. I actually like it, but it's time consuming, right? Yeah, it's not a 5-minute phone conversation, right? You have to establish a relationship with them. And the underwriting, of course, takes time and digging into the markets and everything, it all just takes a lot of time. So I was also running an advertising business at that same time. And so it was just difficult. So I was able to meet up with another team also through RE Mentor people that were getting some deal flow, having a little more struggle on the capital raising side. So I felt like I could help out with that. And I'd been talking about it for a year for this group and putting all this together. And honestly, I was just eager to be involved into a deal. So I was able to put that out and it was an email to all of these potential investors. I put some of my own money into that deal, raised a little bit of money for that, not a whole lot, but I didn't really expect it, right? I knew the first deal most, as I was taught, right? Not everybody wants to be your guinea pig on the first deal, right? So that's where the deal flow really is important. So I knew that, but I was able to give business experience to the team and they kind of quickly brought me into another deal and then another deal. And then I got into one of my own deals and I brought them in to work with. And so it just really started snowballing like that.
So you pivoted. So, you know, everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses. Some people find it easier to go and source deals and some people find it easier to raise money and some people find it easier to underwrite. It's like, those are the three legs of a multifamily team. So you pivoted over to the raising money aspect of it. So good. Let's go to due diligence. Any surprises pop up during due diligence?
Not really. I mean, they had a hot tub there that was about as green and moldy as you could imagine. And we're not using that. We did nothing with that. hot tubs in apartment buildings are not necessarily a great thing, especially if this is an enclosed one. It has a really nice swimming pool.
You know what they would call that? Remember the Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
That would be the Seaman Swamp.
The Seaman Swamp. That's right. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. It was a great building, solid steel construction, great bones. Has just got a lot kind of done in the very high ceilings, exposed beams in the ceilings and the units. And actually, we started getting offers to buy it. As soon as we had filled it up, we started getting unsolicited offers that were actually quite high. We almost sold.
Was this in 221?
No, this is the 56.
Was this in 2021?
The offers were 2021 and going into 2022. Actually, we had three separate buyers.
Those are crazy times. I don't know when we'll see those again, but man.
I know. Yeah, interesting enough, two of them came from different large student housing builders, and they actually wanted to scrape it and build brand new facility on the land.
Oh, interesting. So you got this up. So you had it full. You did the rehab on it. Everything's done. What's it worth? How much did you pay for it, actually?
We paid 4.6, something like that, 4.6 for it. Our offers are coming in at, believe it or not, our last offer came in at 8.
Wow. And how much did you put in? Did you put 500K? Any more than that?
No. Honestly, the offer started coming in right away, literally 6 months after we bought it. And so when our business plan wasn't to start our CapEx for 6 months because of the existing leases, we might have renovated a couple of units and that's about it.
Oh, wow.
Suddenly started getting these offers that were coming in just crazy, like $2 million more than we paid for it, right? And even that, but then we're looking at it, kind of crunching those numbers, which is interesting, right? To kind of figure out how everybody's going to weather with that, with the investors and the GP team. And we just turned down the first two offers, even though they're that high, because we just felt we could do even better. We just felt continuing our business plan with what we have and our existing loan that we could really knock it out of the park. So
what's your projection? What's this property going to be worth? When do you plan on reselling? And what's your projection on what it's going to be worth?
We're very strong this property be worth a $9 million mark for sure. Yeah.
When?
The market has changed right now, but we're in a great position where we can ride this through. So when we pull out of this market, we expect it to be worth that for sure.
Oh, so have you put that $500,000 into it by now, or are you still doing that?
No, work? No, we haven't. As a matter of fact,
you still haven't put any in?
Well, we've put in little, but not a whole lot because of these offers. And the last offer was really high and we actually accepted the offer. But unfortunately, that offer happened.
Market changed.
The market changed and the buyer pulled out. Yeah.
I'm glad you accepted one of those offers because I was thinking to myself, man, he's crazy not to accept that $8 million offer.
Well, I have to say, I wanted to take one of the first couple offers, but my partner was the one kind of pulling back on that. But
so is the plan in this upcoming year to renovate those units, bring them up to market, and then raise your rents up? Well, how much do you think you can raise those rents when you bring these units up to market?
Well, that's the thing. We've already raised the rents quite a bit and just organically, right? And just through the rotation of the tenants, we're already past our projections. But of course, cost of goods and everything else has gone up as well too, like with everything. But yeah, it's looking really good.
So I want to ask you, you've done a bunch of deals now. Were there any surprises in this particular deal that popped up? Unusual. Anything unusual with this particular deal?
This one went fairly smooth. I mean, other than, of course, us having to rent units prior to closing, risk factor there. But we took on a property management company, actually, that was one of the largest in the country that don't even take properties this small. Mm-hmm. But they had four other properties in Waco. And we felt because of our need of having a very fast getting the occupancy up, we needed a very experienced property management to do that. And they met us at the property and we looked at all their other properties and they just gave us 100% confidence that they could rent this up fast, like 30 days fast, right? And so we ended up paying a higher price for that because they don't usually take smaller properties. So we're paying like a 12% property management fee. But since then, we've changed property managements actually twice.
That's a whole nother discussion because when you said twice, that meant one of them didn't work out. That's a whole history right there.
That's right.
Okay, so I have three questions. Before we end, the first one is, what's your inspirational go-to movie when you just want to be inspired?
My go-to movie? I don't know. Maybe Rocky Balboa, man. It comes to mind, I guess. You know,
The first one?
Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome. What? Recommend a book that you think...
Recommend a book. I mean, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, of course, is the iconic. But there's so many that I've been reading or looking at.
What are you reading now?
I actually flipped the script.
Flipped the script? What's that about?
Yeah, called Flip the Script from Ryan Clef. And he's a master negotiator, negotiated millions and millions of dollars of transactions, hundreds of millions around the world globally. And he just talks about how he analyzes very hard negotiators and how he's able to flip the script to get them to see his point of view.
That's interesting. And then the last question is, what did you buy at that Magnolia Bakery?
Cupcake, of course.
Oh, is that the same Magnolia that's in New York City?
I don't know.
Magnolia Cup, was it all cupcakes?
A lot of cupcakes. It's a traditional bakery with all different kinds of things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Magnolia is in New York. It's really good. All right. Well, that is another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. This is Mike DeRochier, and that's how that deal got done.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.